morning, my baby made me cry.
Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a Southern Storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, now on Pantheon Podcast. You can go on there and check out so many other great shows, podcasts to listen to, and Jason's here, and he might even tell you about some.
Oh, you know, all of our friends out there in Pantheon Podcast land. So Jay from the Hook Rocks, we've got Mistress Carrie, we've got What's Hot in Strip Clubs, Brian. I know that's your favorite one.
I have yet to listen to that, but I can kind of guess, you know.
I mean, you know, I did find out the format. It's about what songs they think would be hot in a strip club.
Right.
I said, you know, some of the bands we have on here might work out. You know, it's possible.
Two Live Crew, The Train.
Def Leppard did just come out with an album of all the hits, but sent to orchestral backing music. So, you know, Pour Some Sugar on Me was always the best one. So they can do that to orchestra versions of the song.
Wow. So heard from Adam Hamilton, thanked us for being on the podcast, and he turned us on to some new music. A gentleman named Mark Knight, who used to be in Bang Tango, who's now doing like a almost like a Jason Isbell, Tom Petty kind of style.
Like an Americana style music. Yeah.
And listen to it, and I think it's fantastic. And we've reached out to him, and he's game to be a guest.
Yeah, it was good talking with Adam finally in person. Guys got connections out the door. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that interview last week. And Mark is great. When I saw that post, I put it up on our site, listened to the music too, Brian. I was like, man, this is really good. Right, totally up our alley.
Right, for sure. Other big news of the day. I've been like chatting back and forth with Bryson from Mojo Thunder. They're playing this Black Mountain Jamboree kind of little festival. Right in like Southern Kentucky, and I'm trying to pull out all the stops to go, but I'm chatting with him and I'm like, hey, when can I call you? And he's like, well, because I'm in the studio all week now, so next week we can hook up on a call. And it's like, holy shit, right on. They're got new music they're working on, and they even posted it like on the Facebook Shorts thing, which I get confused with TikTok, because that's like the Facebook like competition is the Facebook Shorts.
So or it's like the Reels on Instagram. Yeah. And sometimes people do TikToks and then the Reels on Instagram, but they're also the story. I don't know. I'm too old to understand how the TikTok stuff works.
Yeah. So I tried to back at him and he confirmed, yeah, that they're in the studio. They're in a studio in Lexington. He didn't say the name of or the producer or whatever, but
nice.
They're going to cut like 16 songs and eight or nine of them.
Overachievers, so. 16. That's a lot. They could almost do a double album.
Yeah.
And you know who else is in the studio? And I sent you a picture. Studio.
Who else?
Goodbye June's in the studio right
They're
now.
They're in the studio.
They're in the studio.
Wow. Because, you know, that's pretty cool because, you know, having just, you know, Tyler just produced, you know, the Weathered Souls record. Mm-hmm. And then they go in themselves. I wonder if they're working at the same time. But
yeah, I sent him awesome. A text and just said, hey, what's going on with Goodbye June? And he said, this is what's going on. And sent me a picture of all their instruments and then them in the recording studio. So I said, all right, well, what's the timing? He thinks fall with a winter release. They'll be done in fall with a winter release.
Okay,
cool. Looking forward to that. Their last record was killer too. So Mojo, man, if we get Mojo Thunder and Goodbye June out this year, that'll be great.
It'll be great. I dropped that line with him too. It's like, when's the record going to come out? Because of course you guys have a priority to come on when that happens.
Yeah. Right. Our friend. Yeah. Well, LA Guns is speaking Adam Hamilton. They've got their new album's going to come out before the end of the year as well. So they're going to have two in 1 year.
Oh, wow. Really? Yeah.
Cool. And Cold Stairs are supposed to have another one come out by the end of the year. So there's a lot of double dipping this year. Yeah. I'm excited. I mean, we're going to be very busy this fall and winter with podcasts.
And Jack's record just came out. Jack's Hollow, her record just came out recently. We're just trying to get her in the schedule somewhere and playing a little email tag and whatnot. So
we'll get her back. She's one of our favorites, has been on there. And, you know, speaking of which, Brian, we've got a lot of people lined up that are come on. Should we give people a little bit of taste?
Sure.
Of
what to expect coming up here? It's hard to keep track. I sometimes just keep in my head and I'll write like a thing. I got some notebook app on my phone and write it on paper and remind me.
Here's who we've been talking to and are going to be coming. Steve Gorman is going to come back on sometime soon to talk about his new project, The Bagman, with Nick Gorvick, who he plays with in Trigger Hippie, also Band of Heathens, and Luther Dickinson from, of course, the North Mississippi All-Stars, and he played with them a bit for the Black Crowes. So looking forward to having Steve back on when we can get a date settled. Eliza Neal, who's a good blues artist out of Detroit.
Yep.
We also have Alan Paul, who co-wrote the book on the Allman Brothers Band with our buddy Andy Aldort. He's got a book about the making of the Brothers and Sisters Allman Brothers record. So he's going to be on. Samantha Fish's PR to get her on at the same time too, Brian. It's a lot of blues people, actually.
Yeah, and there's also a couple of, you know, more bands, southern bands. I got to, you know, talk to a couple bands. One, the Bourbon Brothers. One, the Delta Sons, talking about them. They're ready and whatever. And also, speaking of Delta, the Delta Generators from up northeast near our friend Seth Miller's area. And Seth has helped with hooking those guys up with us. So we'll look forward to that. Seth being our, you know, friends through the State of America, and I'm wearing my State of America t-shirt.
You are wearing your State of America shirt tonight. Look at you.
Yep.
Representing our brothers.
Indeed. And there's so
speaking
many...
of which, posters. Did you get posters from those guys?
I did. I got a poster from the Crowes Run at the Fillmore in December of 2010, and then they did a comic strip kind of thing. And I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, you sent me a picture of that one. That was awesome.
Have you gotten that yet, or did you get something different?
They sent me three shows from the Columbus area over the years, so I was really stoked for that because those were all three shows I actually attended.
Right. Yeah, and me too. The last part of the comic strip says, you know, they're headed to Playmakers Pavilion in Fargo. This was in September of 2006. I'm like, yeah, I was at that show.
Those guys are great. You know, one, they do a good podcast. They talk great Crow stuff and related music. Super nice guys. And if you join the Patreon, you get stuff like that. They are very giving for the Patreon members. Join it.
Yeah, and they're a great influence on the podcast here and great source to try to kind of, you know, get some ideas for.
Yeah. Shout out David and Ian, because I know you're listening. Thank you, guys.
Well, there's a lot of great new bands, and we have another one coming up, and that will be The Dirty Gospel with Garrett Holloway and Jared Jett. What a great...
Right out of Tennessee, Brian. So Tennessee, we've talked a lot of Tennessee artists lately. They're starting getting in that Kentucky territory. Just every time you turn around, there's a good band.
Yeah, Nashville. Well, another band that's playing at the Black Mountain Jamboree is Bioji from Nashville, but we're talking about the Dirty Gospel
out of Knoxville, right? These guys are Knoxville.
Right, yeah, and they live real close to the Shed, I believe.
Yep.
It's 5 minutes.
You'll hear some stories about that with the Shed and Blackberry Smoke and them Dirty Roses.
I was just watching some Blackberry Smoke from the Shed last night a little bit.
God, so good. They're not coming in Ohio so far this summer. I'm a little disappointed by that. I keep maybe in the fall they'll come around here.
Yeah. But no, I came across the Dirty Gospel because there was a ad. I think I was on them Dirty Roses site where they both played the same weekend at the Shed.
Right.
So it was the double dirty weekend with the Dirty Gospel and them Dirty Roses.
I love that.
Also,
that would have made some good merch, Brian. Yeah. Some good double dirty merch.
And also where I came across one for the road. They opened for the Dirty Gospel, and they'll talk a little bit about going to see their show. And, well, just great. Fabulous. What else can I say?
But nothing. Let's just talk to the guys and let everybody hear it.
All right, you guys, kick back, relax, and listen to our conversation with Garrett and Jared from The Dirty Gospel. Segment of the podcast, Jason's going to introduce our guest today.
And I am super excited to introduce our guest today. It's a cool band out of Tennessee. Tennessee and Georgia, Brian, are growing to the level of these bands that we see out of Kentucky. Every time we turn around, there's a new good band we're discovering out of Tennessee. And these guys certainly fit that mold. But we have Garrett and Jared from The Dirty Gospel. How you doing, guys?
Doing good. Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for being on. How's everything there? You're near Knoxville, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I'd say we're about 10, 15 minutes south of Knoxville.
Right on, right on. So, man, we got to just hear about how this old Dirty Gospel band came about.
Man, me and Jared here, we've been best friends for quite a while now. We actually went through high school together. And we kind of learned to play together, started playing, you know, cover music just like everybody. And after probably, I don't know, maybe 8 years of playing cover stuff around town and everything, we were just kind of like, you know, there's more to it. And we wanted to find something else that's going to kind of keep us interested and kind of keep the juices flowing. So we just decided to kind of move towards an original project. And then, you know, naturally, we just needed to go on and change the name and just kind of get a whole new fresh start. So that's kind of how The Dirty Gospel started.
Were you guys doing this as a high school covers band, just the two of you, or did you have other classmates rounding out the band?
Yeah, we had a couple of other guys playing with us, you know. There's a guy that's played with us for a long time. He introduced Garrett and I, and, you know, I remember it's funny you asked that, because looking back, you know, Garrett and I actually met. We were both holding the guitar. I think I was probably
Were you holding the same guitar?
Not the same guitar.
Not the same.
I mean, no, I think you would meet that way.
No, he was a Fender guy back then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you're using the Les Pauls now, I can see from the photos.
Yeah, mostly. Yeah, once you go with the Les Paul, it's hard to go back. I still get the Fender out now and then, but but yeah, no, I just, Garrett and I met back in, I don't know, I was probably in eighth grade, and, you know, it was funny. We just kind of clicked together or planned it. I feel like it was, I was like, wow, this guy kind of plays like I do. So, you know, years later, we were both, this is after high school, we were in college, and we had a class together, and we bumped into each other, and he's like, hey, man, I'm kind of trying to start something up. Why don't you come over tomorrow? And since then, man, we've just been getting after it.
Did you guys meet in eighth grade at classes? You guys said you guys were both holding a guitar. Like, where was this?
Well, it was actually at the other guy's house, and he was the bass player for a long time. You know, I got to really playing with him a lot through church, and it was, like I said, it was just a mutual friend. It was in his grade. I'm actually just a year or two younger, but we end up going over to his parents' house at the time, and he was actually in, you know, a cover band. And I remember thinking back then, like, it was, they were big time, you know, they had a full setup, had drums with racks and everything. And it was just like, oh man, this is what it's about. I mean,
did you have the thing that flips the drums like 360, like Tommy Lee?
not quite Motley Crue, but, you know, it was still, it was the next best thing at the time. And I remember that was the first time I think we probably met, was jamming over there at his house. And, you know, through high school, Jared ended up going to a different high school and graduating there. And so there was probably a couple years of we didn't see each other. But, you know, I just knew Jared was just a naturally very gifted guitarist. And you could tell that it's just like the way he plays is very natural. It's not something that you can necessarily teach. It's a lot of feel. And at the time I was putting together a project, and I was just walking through the campus there and bumped into Jared, and I was like, oh my gosh, it had to be fate then, you know. It was just like, man, what are you doing this afternoon? Like, I'm putting something together. You still play? Would you want to come over? And he knocked the dust off the instrument and came over, and he hadn't lost it. So, and we've been playing ever since.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Where does the name The Dirty Gospel come from?
That's up for interpretation. We've heard a lot of different theories, and I think, to be honest with you, all of us have our own, but I think the commonality between all of our opinions on the Dirty Gospel is it's rock and roll. It's just down and dirty rock and roll. You know, we all believe in that, and that's something that that we can all kind of get behind. So
yeah, I think a lot of people always think that it's always, you know, you must be, is this, I don't know, sacrilegious or anything like that. And man, it's all what you want it to believe or whatever you think it is. But at the end of the day, for us, it just means rock and roll.
That's awesome, man. That's really awesome. I totally can identify with that. Man, I wish you guys hadn't have thought of this name and I thought at the beginning of the podcast.
That would be that'd be a great name for the podcast, The Dirty Gospel.
Well, anyway, speaking of dirty, and where I saw you guys was like on I think it was on Them Dirty Roses website, where it was like a Friday and Saturday. Was it at the Shed?
That's correct, yeah.
And then you guys played Friday, Them Dirty Roses played Saturday, and then One for the Road that we've had on too, open for you guys. And then they ended up playing acoustic because the Josephines could make it. So I don't know how he had a title there, but it was like the double dirty, whatever.
Yeah, dirty double weekend, I think. Yeah.
That's great. Man.
That's cool, man. That's a hell of a lineup because everybody fits in so well on that, man.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. That was a fantastic weekend down at the Shed. You know, we're lucky enough to have, you know, that venue in our backyard, so we get all the music all the time, you know, going through high school and stuff. They're having Blackberry Smoke out here and all these bands. I'm like, wow, that's you know, we were kind of blessed to have a venue that supported that type of genre of music so close to us, you know. So that's kind of all we knew, you know.
Yeah,
so
it's one of those things you take for granted, you know. It's so close. I mean, we definitely take advantage of it too, but they just know how to do it right over there at the Shed. There's no doubt about that. And I follow, you know, a lot of the fan pages of these other bands, and it's really cool to see, like, a lot of them. The Shed is a bucket list show for a lot of these fans. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's 15 minutes from here, you know, so wow. it's a cool deal just to be that close and to have that kind of relationship with them. We're very blessed.
It's on my list to go see, especially the Blackberry Smoke, like the homecoming thing they do with the Shed, which I think they just did, right?
Correct. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you guys go?
Two weekends ago. Yep. We were down there. Yeah. If you ever make it down, say what?
Did you guys go both nights?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Did the Thunderbolts open one of those nights, or who? No.
They weren't down there that weekend. I'm trying to think. To be honest with you, most of the bands that I heard, I'd never heard them before. One of them was that other Knoxville band, though.
Cordovas.
The Cordovas.
Okay.
Yeah, they were great. Nice.
Check them out. Not familiar. Yeah,
good stuff, really.
I'll hit you guys up when I go down there. It's like Knoxville's 5.5 hours for me, maybe, where I'm at.
Yeah.
Six, something like
please
that.
Please do, man. It wouldn't be a thing at all to meet up over there.
Be great. Look, Brian, we're making friends everywhere. Oh, I love it.
Sure.
All right. What kind of cover songs were you guys playing when you were doing your high school band?
Man, we played a little bit of everything. I think we've always, I think one thing that's kept us, you know, is that Southern rock, Lynyrd mm-hmm. Skynyrd, CCR.
That's right.
That kind of good stuff. I mean, We've played a lot of oddball stuff. We might play a little outfield and stuff like that, but
which one are we doing in the outfield though?
Your love. My love. Your love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Killer.
By the way, they're not a one hit wonder band. They have a bunch of good songs. Not everyone charted super high in the US, but check them out. Great band.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
I was just curious to throw out something obscure like Say It Ain't So, which is not the Weezer song. It's their own it's their own song.
Yeah.
I think we've even done that one once or twice. Back in the day.
Nothing wrong with throwing some Weezer in a set, you know?
Well, you got to think we're 90s babies, so.
Yeah.
Jason was mentioning covers. I want to know about how did the originals start coming up? Like, do you have any specific kind of songwriting process? Do they just come? How did that all come about?
Man, there's a process, it's song by song, you know, but typically the way, like, especially all the songs on this first album, we're doing a little different now, but like this first album, I was primarily writing most of the material. And then the way we would do it is I would basically write them, get them pretty dang close or whatever. And then first thing is I want to go over here to Jared and be like, hey, this is what I've got, this is what I'm thinking, what do you think? And then from there, we would really fine tune it and kind of, you know, knock the edges off of it and then present it to the band. And that's kind of how we did all the ones of the first album. Now, you know, since then, we've really been doing some more writing out there in the studio, or in the rehearsal room. Yeah, and we'll get out there and kind of just start playing off of each other. And stuff like that. You know, some of the songs when we were in the studio were written in the studio. Now we kind of have a little more time and I guess this headspace and whatever, just to be able to write and create what we want, you know?
Yeah.
You mentioned the studio. Where was this recorded, or have you recorded to different places? And if so, do you have like engineer or producer?
Yeah, we played Travis Wyrick produced our record. And it's Lakeside Studios in Knoxville. It came to us highly recommended. I think everybody in East Tennessee knows who Travis Wyrick is. And, it was our first record. So it was quite an experience. It was really interesting. Travis knows how to really, inspire his artists. So it was a lot of fun. It really was. And Travis is great.
So rest of the band, who's rounding out the rest of the band, and when do they come in? I said you guys both got back together on a college campus, started putting this you know, at least you guys together. When do the rest of the guys come in?
So the rest of the guys with this band, now most of them are, they've come a little bit later, you know, and we've definitely kind of went through some different lineup changes and stuff like that. But, you know, we've been this lineup now for over a year, and definitely I think we've got a winner lineup now. But we've got, I guess John came in, was the next person to come in. And I'd say he came in probably 2 years ago now. He's been playing keys with us, keys backup.
And he's awesome. I was talking to Brian. Sorry to cut you off. I was talking to Brian before you guys came on. I'm like, anytime you get a band that focuses like the keys and the organ, I love, and his playing is really good.
He's killer. It was funny because I think Garrett and I both had this sound that we wanted to come out of the keys, and we kept, and John didn't play that way. And eventually I think we met somewhere in the middle and began to understand that John is kind of his own thing. He plays this airy, spacey sort of keys, and he's really fantastic.
Absolutely. You know, John came from a very much like a singer songwriter piano style background. So, you know, I mean, the organ is, it might look like a piano, but it is absolutely a different instrument, and it fits completely different with the music. And man, from the day he started with us till today, it's amazing how well he blends with us. I mean, and it's just like what you're talking about with Southern rock. In my opinion, you just about have to have that.
You got to have it. You got to.
So it's the gospel.
the dirty gospel.
Right. Dirty gospel. So then we got Chris Potosik on the drums. He is just a monster. He's been around here in the Knoxville scene for a long time. He's been out with other bands. He's been around for a long time. He's got a whole following himself, but he's the man. He was such a cool addition because the drums, a lot of times – are kind of the unsung heroes that you don't get to see, you know, especially as a band. If you don't have a drum riser or anything like that, you know, you might not even see him back there the whole show. But Chris never has that problem. He plays with so much energy and stuff. Like, I mean, the first show that he was with us, I remember people were coming up to us like, man, that drummer is insane.
Yeah.
So we're very blessed and happy to have Chris along. And then right after Chris, we ended up getting Seth, and he is Leon Wilkerson from Lynyrd Skynyrd reincarnated. I tell him that all the time, but man, it's so hard to find a bass player that plays like he does. And I mean, I swear he was born in the wrong era, but I'm glad he was. So
You keep mentioning Knoxville, and you just said yourself the Knoxville scene, and that's, we always ask our artists like where they're from, is there legitimate scene there?
There's a scene. I don't know if the Knoxville scene is as Southern rock as we are. I think Knoxville is more of a songwriter scene.
I would figure country. Like, especially like pop country.
You definitely have a lot of that modern country and stuff like that. There's a cool downtown scene for sure. But you know, it's not quite like Nashville, but you know, there is a cool, there's a couple really cool venues, in the downtown Market Square scene. You've got a place we played at recently, Open Chord in Knoxville. They've got some pretty cool artists that come through there, and yeah, it's pretty neat. We did the Blue Plate special recently down in Knoxville, where we basically played actually on air, and it was pretty neat. No pressure, but
no pressure.
But it was a great experience.
How about for blues? Are there blues players there, and are you guys influenced particularly by any blues artists?
Yeah, there's not a huge blues scene in Knoxville, but the second part of the question, I can tell you, you know, like Garrett said, I was a Fender guy. I was a strat player for a long time. And I think that it's probably, you know, when I was, I don't know if I was, I think I was 14 or 15 I picked up John Mayer's Continuum record. To me, that was just so incredible. And from there, you know, obviously I went into all the people that, that influenced John Mayer, even all the way back to, you know, bands like AC/DC, and started pointing out, you know, everything that, you know, all those pentatonic shapes and stuff like that. That's, you know, that's, I love that stuff. John Mayer, Eric Clapton. There's definitely a blues influence what we do. Hopefully you can hear it. I don't know.
So I want to ask specifically about Already Gone, that song. I just love the intro there. How did that come about? And it's just, it's familiar for some reason, but I dig it.
Man, I don't know. You know, I don't know if it was, it definitely wasn't intentional, if it was familiar or anything like that. You know, it was, I can remember writing it. It was just sitting in here in the living room with an acoustic guitar. You know, Tom is working a day job, and a lot of times when it comes with writing, you know, you just get something in your head, you know, and mm-hmm. you're like, oh my gosh, I gotta put that down right now. And I really and truly that progression that you go, that little walk down chromatic thing, it really wasn't even so much that as it was the harmony part that really right. wrote that, which is what you hear at like the end of the song. Mm-hmm. You'll hear both of us kick in on the dueling guitars. And that's what I was kind of like trying to like recreate that. And I'm like, all right, well, that's going to have to be that FCG walk down, you know? So that's just kind of how we decided to just, heck, it was so good at the end. Let's just kick the song off with it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those songs that didn't actually form until we were really in the studio.
Yeah.
That's one of those that we was kind of a skeleton when we went in, and we were like, you know, maybe if there's one to cut, it's probably going to be that one. It survived. So I think, you know, I think we've had a good response to that song, and it's definitely one of my favorite on the record.
And with that, that's interesting though. You know, I'm in a band, we've done a couple albums, but we've showed up at the studio sometimes with the skeleton of a song, not sure really what we were going to do with it. Did you have your producer help you, or did you guys kind of figure that out on your own?
Yeah, I mean, our producer, the way he was working, I mean, he was definitely, we didn't so much write the songs in the studio.
That's right.
But right, it was right. more of that like, costs money, we, because if you're not ready, absolutely. That costs a lot of money.
Right. I'm not that fast of a writer. But, you know, he was definitely pushing hard. You yeah. know, and things we were trying to do was, and I remember some key moments or key things that we were talking about in the studio was like, you know, all right, we're going for a full album here. It's not an EP, it's full album. We have to make sure we want certain moments. You know, we don't want to necessarily force the moments to make them happen. But, you know, we started talking about different ideas of, you know, different song tempos and beats and things like that. We would hear them and just kind of like, hey man, like we need a song, you know, that is, you know, a little bit more laid back, or man, I really think a cool stripped down song would be great in here, and things like that, you know? So that was kind of like the inspiration, the drive, like when it was back home and it was, you know, back to the grind of trying to write, like, try to like channel that headspace of like, all right, what's a good, like, I need to make a good like swinging ballad, or I need a good stripped down acoustic song or something like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah you know, I mean, producers are there to help push you guys and make you better, and we had one song off our third album where it just wasn't working, and he sat us down and said, are you guys happy with that? And we're like, no, but we ended up creating a better song out of it, you know. And we had another song too off our second record where we're writing right up to the point that we recorded. So it's interesting sometimes where the producers yeah. come in and help you, or how much space they can provide to let you figure things out on your own. But again, you don't want to wait too long in the studio, because all it's just rolling up the dollars every minute that goes by.
Absolutely. And you know, they all have their own different methods of how they want to, you know, you're trying to get to point B. There's
not I like when they look at you with like a look of disappointment, like your parents do. That's my favorite. They don't say anything. They just have a disappointed look on their face.
Had a few of them.
Me too.
I will say though, you know, a big part of that, just to add to, you know, the kind of, you know, not a song not being complete when we got it to the studio. You know, Garrett and I both play, you know, a lot of the leads. You know, in a lot of stuff it's listed I'm the lead player, but Garrett plays a lot of lead as well. So it's funny, is a lot of the discussions were, you know, who's going to play this part? And if you're going to play it, then what am I going to do here? So a big part of our music came from those kind of conversations, and it's having to find somewhere else to stay out of each other's way. And, you know, a lot of that came in the studio, but a ton of that came from just the years we've played together. You know, I think maybe, at times we've overcompensated, and there are parts where it's like, you know, you should put some notes in there, but I think we both prefer, we love to play guitar. We love to shred. We love all that stuff. But I think we've come to appreciate the spots where you don't overplay, you know, even though there's two guitarists that we both really like to throw in little leads and stuff, where we've learned to refrain and appreciate those parts where there's not any lead being played, and really, really come to love those little pockets of the music. So,
yeah, I think that you get to this point where it's, you know, less is more in some mm-hmm. situations. And I also think, like, you know, for years it was just two guitars, you know, bass, drums, obviously, but just two guitars. But, you know, when you add that fifth member, that keys in, you know, you're creating a wall of sound. And every time you add somebody else, that's that much less you need to play to create that wall, you know. And that, I think this, the first album, I think we were definitely already starting to we already kind of were onto that before we got into the studio. But I think during the studio and coming out of the studio, we really understood, you know, where do we each other live in these songs, and how do we stay out of each other's way?
Does that change at all on stage from what, how something was played in the studio or on the record? Is there any way that you transform at all? Like, you ever play something like a little bit different in the live setting, or?
You know, I mean, for the most part, no, it doesn't change. There's probably one or two little runs here and there, like, you know, where maybe I'm singing an outro chorus or something like that, and I'm not gonna probably rip over top of that. I'm not quite John Mayer, but Jared will just go on and grab it, even if I was the one that did during the studio. But for the most part, man, we really try to do the album justice as much as we can and play the parts that we did and we created.
Right on. So we've already mentioned Blackberry Smoke, and of course we consider them, and for me, I consider them and Whiskey Myers to be the flagships of this kind of music. But besides them, let's say anybody that's been around for like 20 years, all the way down to 5 years or new, who are you guys really digging? Who do you have camaraderie with? And then I'll have a second question after that.
You know, we played with Tanner Usry this weekend, and they put on a hell of a show. I don't know if I was expecting the extent to the, you know, rock and roll kind of takes over their show, but they were tremendous. So that was interesting, but, you know, I think we listened to all the people that are out today, you know, them Dirty Roses. We're certainly aware of what they're doing, and they're fantastic.
Thunderbolts,
Still Woods, you know, One for the Road. These bands, I think they get it. You know, when you walk in a room and you see these folks playing, it's like, oh, they get it.
I think, man, I'll even go as far as like Turnpike Troubadours. You know, I was so excited to hear they were back swinging. You know, and they were one of my favorites back in the day when they got back together. I was I was so dang excited. I remember calling Jared like, dude, Turnpike's back. We've got to go see them. And we are yet to see them, but it is going to happen.
I think you kind of already answered the second one, because we always ask, like, we're always looking for any new artists that we may not have heard of. So we're always wondering, like, is there anybody out there that you would like, oh man, you got to listen to so-and-so and they'll really knock your socks off.
Turnpike. I mean, not their, you know, small, y'all probably have heard of Turnpike.
Oh, yeah,
Trudel,
for sure. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But, yeah.
Dude, I'll tell you a band, that we saw, and I would love to go see them again. I just haven't seen them close by. And there were another one of these that they were a killer band and they ended up breaking up and now they're back together. It's the Delta Saints.
Oh yeah.
Man.
Oh yeah. I've heard of those guys. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, dang, I guess I got to think of another one.
Delta Saints destroyed a stage. One time we were seeing, this was probably 12 years ago. We were seeing Blackberry Smoke play in Chattanooga. And the Delta Saints came out and just completely destroyed.
Never heard them. Never know. You know, they had no idea who they were. Honest to God, didn't even really care, like, who was opening the show. We were just going to see Smoke. And we were sitting there and that band came out. And I remember we weren't even through the first song. And me and him were looking at each other like, who the heck is this? Like, holy crap. Smoke obviously killed, but
yeah.
I mean, we talked the whole way home. Like, there's nothing better, you know, when you go see a band live and you, the cover band, or not the cover band, the opening band was, you know, just as good, or, you know, impressed you, and you just had no idea that they were going to be there, you know? So it was just kind of like the cherry on top for the show. Yeah. It's cool when you discover a band live too, you know? You know, it's one thing just, you know, going down a wormhole on YouTube or something, but
yeah, I definitely like their live stuff. I've listened to their album, but their live show with all the energy and everything is a lot better than just listening to it, the music.
Absolutely.
So what's next for the band as far as touring, playing shows?
Man, we're just, you know, we're kind of trying to break out of here. We're getting out into Chattanooga. We would play that North Georgia show just this past weekend. And that's kind of where we have our crosshairs pointed right now, is just trying to get out of here in a regional map, you know, 3 hours all around us. You know, that's where we want to be. You know, we've made some big moves just lately. I was working just a regular 8-to-5 job up until just recently, and I basically left it, and I've gotten an offer from an old friend to kind of join on with him and kind of do some events with him, and that's going to basically kind of get me out of the 8-to-5 and have a lot more flexible schedule, so I should never have to miss a show. I should be able to take every opportunity that comes our way, hopefully. So right now, we're in the best position we've been to be able to start trying to break out of here and, you know, maybe start putting some small runs together. Or if somebody asks us to play a good handful of dates with them or something, we're, you know, the truck's ready and the trailer's hooked up to it and we're ready to go.
Very cool. Very cool.
I mean, there are a lot of great places too, Tennessee, Kentucky.
Yeah,
Georgia. As we talk to these bands from these areas that we know, we see go to shows. You guys could do well, even moving on up to Kentucky through Lexington, Covington with the Southgate House. There are plenty of places you guys could hit the road.
Yeah, for sure. And we're excited. We've got some exciting stuff coming up. So stay tuned. I don't know if we can say.
Yeah, I don't. We do have a big show that we are pretty excited about here in September this year. It's actually going to be on my anniversary, but it's September 2nd. Mm-hmm. We're going to be down there at the Shed.
Wait a minute, your wedding anniversary?
Yes.
Is everything okay with the wife?
She is more than happy. Elizabeth, okay. You could almost consider her almost a sixth member in the band. She's very much in this. So, but yeah, we're all good. We're going to be playing down there at the Shed. We'll be opening up for Kentucky Headhunters. So,
oh, nice. They're our buddies. Yeah.
Awesome.
Greg and Richard, we've had those guys on quite a few times. Greg a lot.
Yeah. We're absolutely stoked to do that.
Wait, what day is that again, Garrett?
September 2nd.
September 2nd. Okay. Gotcha. All right. My kids will both be in college in the fall. So I have freedom.
Well, it's a good time to come down here. It'd be a good time to meet.
It would be a good time to, in like weather wise and time of season, be beautiful.
Absolutely.
Let's cross those fingers.
Right. If I can afford to, again, I'll have both kids in college. So hopefully the tickets aren't crazy.
No, that's very cool. Congratulations for you guys. I mean, that's you know, to get to know those guys and play a show and open for them. I think one for the road is open for them too. Like Jason said, we've had Greg on several times and we've had Richard on a couple times, and those guys are absolutely awesome.
Yeah,
very cool.
Good to learn from. Yes.
Is it that time for the show?
Yes, but before we get into the lightning round, guys, you both play guitar. I've looked at your pictures. We got to talk a little bit of gear first.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Sure. Hey, we're always down to talk gear.
Okay. All right. Garrett, you got that nice Firebird. Jared, you mostly play the Les Paul. I know you bring out your Fender every once in a while.
Right.
Tell me why you picked those instruments.
Man, I think, you know, you look at the Southern Rock, the history of Southern Rock and all these bands, you know, that sound that you were trying to, that we want to be, and what just comes naturally to us, it always has to do with those humbuckers or P90s. Nothing wrong with a single coil, but for us, man, we love that fat sound. And Gibson just always seems to be that.
Is your Firebird the mini hums, like the 70s style mini humbuckers, or are they full on?
It's those Firebird pickups, and it's actually a 94 model. So it's, you know, it's got the banjo tuners and all that kind of good stuff. But but it's cool because, you know, even there's a big difference, you know, even just between the like a Firebird and a Les Paul. You know, you can play a Les Paul and you still get some sonic differences. You know, a lot of times you do see a Fender and a Gibson on stage, and we can still kind of get that with just my Firebird and his Les Paul.
Well, those mini humbuckers, right? Those are definitely different than the full-on, you know, PAF style humbucker. So, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I usually swap over to the P90s a lot too. I've got my special that I've played for years. That's like that's my baby.
What color is it?
It's flat black.
Nice.
I've had it for, it's probably about as long as we've been playing together, and I don't think it'll ever go. That's
single cut, double cut. What do we got?
Single cut.
Okay. So like my TV yellow one, except it's black.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah. Wrap around bridge.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now you're talking my language. I would say you have good taste. I want a Firebird. I don't have a Firebird. There's no reason for me to get a Firebird other than they look cool.
You never know, man. It's another tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. You know, that's for sure. But good guitar choices. All right, Jared, for you, you're primarily playing that Les Paul now. You moved on from a, a Strat? Like, what do you like about the Les Paul?
Oh man, it's so beefy. It's great. I mean, and I've recently started playing Marshalls as well. So it's, you just can't beat a Les Paul through a Marshall, you know. For me, I found the guitar that I'm going to play until I find something else that really blows my mind. But the way Gibson is making Les Pauls now, it's just tremendous. But, you know, I'm playing through an old Marshall Bluesbreaker and a Silver Jubilee. So it's really like, it's like a playground up there. It's so much fun cranking those amps. And I mean, it's so much fun for me. I know everyone else in the band is.
Garrett's chuckling over there. But,
yeah. No, it's so much fun being able to crank the Marshalls.
Well, you're probably not using that many pedals then, are you?
I use a couple. Yeah, I use a couple. Mostly modulation stuff, but there's a
delay, reverb. You got a tuner. What do we got? Wah pedal,
reverb, tremolo. Tremolo has been a big one here of late. A little bit of delay sometimes. But no, that's pretty much it. I've got it's a Baby Blues, and I can't remember who makes that. If you ask me any other time, I can tell you. But it's a Baby Blues pedal, and it's really got a nice warm ZZ Top style drive that you can just kind of put over top of a Marshall that fits really well with it. So I'm really happy with that.
Your Les Paul, is it a 50s or 60s style neck?
It's a 50s style neck. It's huge.
Yeah, you got the chunk. Yeah, you got the baseball bat going on.
No, it's great though. You know, going from a Strat neck to that, it was a big change, but it
different shape, different size, man.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great.
Which I thought you guys looked like both were playing orange amps, and Garrett, that must be you. And is the bass player also playing orange?
No. So, I run an orange cab.
Okay.
I've actually got a Sur head that I run with it. It's a Badger 18. And that amp, I've had it for a while now, and I was running an AC30, which still have it, but I was running an AC30 up until I got that one. And I remember me and him, we were walked into a store one day, and I think we were looking for pedals or something. I don't know, yeah. But we walked in and there that thing was sitting there, you know, on sale or whatever. And I was like, man, I've never played one of those. And just turning that amp on, plugging into it, I had it dialed in within probably 10 seconds. And I was like, I might have to go home with this one. And as far as Seth, he plays that Mark bass rig.
I couldn't tell. I switched from Vox to Orange a couple of years ago. And why I still like the old, you know, the Vox stuff, the Orange, dude, it's just like crunchy goodness, rock and roll right there.
It's rock and roll, absolutely.
And it's orange, so it just stands out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's extra heavy.
Yeah.
Heavy's good. Heavy's good unless you're middle-aged with a bad back like I am. Yeah. And it's not as it's, good, but, you know.
It's great until after the show.
That's why my Les Paul is a 60s neck, because it's a little less weighty. It's the standard still. Mine's running about 9 pounds, but, you know, I didn't want that extra beefy neck to throw more weight on it.
Right. Yeah. Definitely weighs on the back after an hour up there.
I'm using padded guitar straps now, like with these big like memory foam things, just because I'm old and beat up.
Yeah.
I hear you. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that indeed. All right. We'll move on to some of the dumb questions. Those are good gear talk. We won't go too far into because Brian, you know, we don't have a bass player on for Brian, so he gets left out a little bit. But he's learning stuff, right, from all this gear talk.
I am.
Last gear question, though, for both of you. If you could pick any piece of gear in the world, price doesn't matter, what are you guys choosing?
Holy cow.
50s Les Paul Junior,
probably.
Which, tobacco or black?
I would go
TV black. Yellow. Black, yeah.
Well,
I want a Black Junior. I want a Black Junior. I'd love to have that.
I am a fan of the TV Yellow. I've really got my eyes on. I would love an old Alpine White SG Junior. That's kind of what that's what I'm looking for right now. So,
good luck.
Polaris White, yeah.
And when you find it, it's not going to be cheap. But I did say price is not an option with this.
Correct. Yeah.
Jared, what did you say?
I think I have to agree with him. I think we've got similar taste in guitars. I think, you know, we play different stuff because we find ways to fit together and play together. You know, you can't have a bunch of humbuckers, too many humbuckers on stage. But I think I agree with the or an SG Junior, one of the, you know, an old Polaris White. In fact, I mean, you can't really beat that.
Yeah.
And you guys are going to find one and fight over it, aren't you?
Yeah, probably so. We'll have to we could just go in on it probably and then
sure.
You know, but you've been
looking off on stage in the studio. Nothing wrong with that. It's a lot cheaper that way.
Yeah, and you've been kind of looking at like the 335s and stuff like that.
Thinking about it, but I don't know if that's a big difference in sound when you switch 335 or, you know, something that's hollow. So that, you know, probably soon, but I don't know how much I'll have it out.
I just, over the winter, because one of our friends and guests talked me into it, I got the Joe Bonamassa Epiphone 335 62 custom reissue, and it's Gibson USA pickups, wiring. I mean, it's got that little tremolo bar on it. Like, it sounds great and plays great, and like, I am actually impressed that it's an Epiphone. I actually sold a Gibson SG I never really played just to buy that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the Epiphone, the 335s that they come out with are excellent. They really are.
I can't believe how good it sounds. It's a little heavy just because a tremolo bar, like in tailpiece, adds a little weight on. But, dude, it plays great. I did a little setting up on it when I got – because, you know, it's coming over from China or whatever. But, dude, the pickups, it sounds amazing. It plays great.
Oh, for sure.
I'd say it resonates. There's no doubt about that. Big old guitars.
Yeah. Oh, it it's big. When I brought it to our practice, our drummer was like, man, is that a heavy guitar? It's so big. I'm like, it's not really heavy, but it is a big guitar. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's a semi-hollow body. It's got stuff carved out. But it's a great – so where I'm going is a great alternative if you're – you know, because those Gibson 335s are like $3,500, $4,000 new, and used are just a little over $3,000. They're way expensive.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I say they're worth it, though. You know.
Oh, sure. But we had an inside track on some information on those, and I took it and ran with it. I'm happy about the purchase.
No, all right.
I will move on because this isn't about me and my shit. What's the first concert you guys ever went to?
Oh, man. Talk about a question I should know.
You know what? This is – funny. I think I was in sixth grade, county fair, Blake Shelton. Mullet. Blake Shelton.
Nice.
Yeah.
Not the voice Blake Shelton or whatever, not right? He's on the voice. Yeah.
You know, I know that it's not the first concert, but I will say it's probably one of the first that I remember, that I can absolutely remember being at. Because my parents definitely used to take me to concerts all the time when I was little, and I probably just couldn't remember them. But I would say it was the Fall Festival that we used to have here in Maryville. And, man, they used to bring in some big acts for years down here. And I think that the headliner, it might have been, I think it was Reba. I know
Reba McEntire?
That was maybe one of the first concerts I've been to. Yeah.
Nice. Classic country-ish. Well, Blake Shelton's not really classic country. Reba is, but
yeah,
you know, pretty good mainstream country. And now you guys are doing this Southern rock thing.
No, definitely. You know, if we could go back and see Tom Petty, you know,
oh my gosh,
I think if it would have been up to us, it would have been different. But that's
sure.
I think that's what most people here in the Bible Belt kind of gravitate to. Is, you know, top top 40 country. So a lot of us ended up growing up until we started playing guitar and, you know, discovering music, you know, Tom Petty and the Black Crowes, yeah, stuff like that. It was over from there, but.
My kids were younger, I took them both to see Tesla and then Blackberry Smoke and the Magpie Salute playing together.
Oh, wow. Man, dude.
And you would think they would have appreciated it more, but no, they were tired and needed to sit down.
Heck, I appreciate it for them. That's awesome.
I'm trying. No. Yeah. All right. What is the one band or artist you've seen the most?
Man, mine's Blackberry Smoke.
Yeah. Same.
Nice.
Yeah. Right on.
They never put a bad show on ever. I've seen them 10 times. Never a bad show.
Nope. Never been disappointed yet. The only time I've ever been disappointed was when they didn't play. There was one time that the venue ended up canceling on them, and that was awful, but that was not their fault at all. And that's the only time I've ever left the venue kind of upset. But man, anytime I've ever seen Blackberry Smoke, they absolutely crush. I mean,
yeah.
Did you see him on the Whippoorwill tour last fall and winter?
That's when we were supposed to see him and it got canceled.
Oh,
yes.
Bummer.
And we were so excited. We were all going and we had a crew. We were all going to load up and go see him. We were standing in line and they ended up coming out saying the show was canceled. And it was heartbreaking because, yeah, I mean, all their albums are great. Whippoorwill is. It's going to be hard to beat.
It's a modern classic album in the rock, Southern rock genre.
Yep. How many shows do y'all have each of them? Jason, you said 10. I got 8.
I think I figured it up the other day. I think I have either 13 or 14. I think it's 13. But my wife seems to think it might be 14, but I think it's 13.
Is she a fan?
7 or 8 for me.
Say what?
Is your wife a fan as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. His too. I mean, we all go and see him all the time. We'll load up the whole crew.
It's fun. I know Brian's wife is a fan of Blackberry Smoke and Whiskey Mike's Shoot because he always, it's great when you have shows that your wives can also appreciate to take with you.
100%. I completely agree. We're lucky to have him.
Yes. Man, I'll tell you what, the one thing about the Whippoorwill tour though that was weird was, ain't nothing left of me not being the last song in the set. So weird.
Yeah, I know. It is kind of one of those like things that you wait for at their shows and you know it's just going to, you know, you're waiting to, what are they going to go into mid-song, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, because they always play a cover in the middle of it, right?
Right, yep. Yep.
We had Charlie on right before that tour started to talk about that and the record and everything. And we tried to convince him as like, hey, you should, like, you know how they always stop halfway through and do a cover. Well, do that and then, you know, stop, then go into the next song. And then when you're done with the Whippoorwill album or your set, go back to play the last half of Ain't Nothing Left of Me at the very end of the set.
Yeah. You
should have done it.
Oh, that'd have been a winner.
I think he thought about it for a second, but he never did come to fruition though. He tried. That would have been awesome.
No, yeah. I've seen him put 2 or 3 songs in there though. Especially lately they packed 2 or 3 songs in the middle of that one.
Yeah, they'll kind of tease you, you know. Yeah. Go into Petty.
Yeah, that's the last one I saw where they were doing
or
Petty
whatever
on that.
It is. Yeah.
I've seen them do When the Levee Breaks as part of
it. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Killer.
Those guys can do everything. I've seen those guys cover Black Sabbath, like just ridiculous.
Yep. They usually throw in the beginning of Mississippi Kid, but I can't always remember where they do that at. Is it during Sleeping Dogs, or is it in the middle of the Whipper?
I'm going to say that's probably much left to me. I'd say it's probably that open G. I'm pretty positive that that's probably how they would go into it if I had to guess. I don't know if I've seen that one live, but I have definitely. I think I've heard it, you know, on one of their live takes, because I've listened to some of their live performances sometimes on YouTube or whatever. So yeah,
they're just, again, you always get your money's worth and more anytime they play, and they play for a long time.
Yeah,
God,
yeah,
for a new band, they are a great representation, a great like reference, or you know, somebody to resemble. I guess is the right word.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. They've got quite the catalog of songs now. I mean, I don't know exactly how many albums they have out. I shouldn't know for as many times I've seen them, but I will say, you know, just like a couple weekends ago, you know, I was down there all three nights, and I'll tell you, three nights in a row, there might have been a handful of songs that they played every night, but pretty much it was a different set. And that's quite a feat, you know, to be able to come down there and play that big of a catalog of songs. And I mean, they played some stuff from their first album and every, I mean, it was great.
Yeah. God. Well, you almost have to, but again, they've had so many records over such a long career.
Yeah, at one point, I remember reading an article. I remember where it was, but they had written up about the Dirty Gospel and how he had started out as a Lynyrd Skynyrd cover band. And I was like, that's wrong.
We're going to play some Skinner, but.
What was your best cover of a Blackberry Smoke song?
I'll tell you my favorite cover. It may not have been our best. It's probably up there though. Everybody Knows She's Mine.
Yeah.
Oh,
we definitely used to do that one. That was a good one. And we definitely used to do Sleeping Dogs. And we would do like their live show, you know, to go into the Allman Brothers or something like that in the middle of it, and sometimes we change it to something else we would like to do, you know, but we try to do them a little bit of justice, kind of how they would do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. What was your worst cover?
Man, we did the Garth Brooks song one time, and I thought that was probably the end of my musical career.
Yeah, somebody had requested us to play a Garth Brooks song. We're like, you know, we'll try it. And then somebody came up to us after that. Now, I think you guys should stick to rock and roll. You know?
I remember my dad was out there in the crowd. And, like, I remember we come off the break. And I think he even asked me, like, it was pretty bad. Like, when I walk up to the table, he's like, and it wasn't the last song we did. It was probably like mid-set.
It was that parental look of disappointment, like I talked about the producers have.
Yeah, no, you got done with the song and you hear like a, woo, and that's about it, you know. It's like, all right, next song, boys, kick it off.
that was a woo, it's over, not a woo.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember walking up to his table and he goes, was that a Garth Brooks song y'all played? And I'm like, yeah, we're not gonna do it again, don't worry about it.
What you guys should have done is prepared a Chris Gaines song, which, remember, that was Garth Brooks had that one record, Alter Ego, like that.
That's exactly, it's
supposed to be like alternative rock. I don't know what that was.
Oh, he had a wig and everything, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was very 90s alt-rock looking, like he could have been in Savage Garden or something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we know that's you, Garth.
Okay. What is the first record you guys, or album or CD, probably CD for you guys, that you remember getting?
Man, I could tell you what mine was. I don't know if I want to release this or not, but it had to have been, I know it was a Backstreet Boys album, and it was because my they're like 10 years older than me, and when they left the house, I basically inherited all their old CD, you know, so here I'm listening to Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and all of them.
I inherited a Milli Vanilli tape the same way. Inherited.
That's okay. My first record was Andy Gibb's Shadow Dancing. So
classic. Jared, what about you? What's yours?
You know, that's so funny that he said that, because I can remember hearing, I think we had a cassette like in our family car, you know, growing up. But the first record that I bought, that I sought out myself, I think it was High Voltage, AC/DC.
There you go. Okay.
There you go.
Nice. I was since I was probably 11 or 12, but I was making it I was collecting all of these AC/DC CDs. so I could have them all. And I think I ended up getting like 8 or 9 and then stopping. But
I actually have something to add to that if I don't get it.
Yeah, at least go ahead.
Let me give myself a little more credibility here. But but now I will say the first album I ever bought and specifically vinyl I ever bought was at a flea market one time. And I think we were in Myrtle Beach at this flea market. And, you know, my dad's always been real big into vinyl and he still has a huge vinyl collection. And I know a lot of the albums that he has. He is a big AC/DC guy. And I'm sitting there walking through and I see a For Those About to Rock, We Salute You album. And I know for a fact he does not have that one. And I thought, and he wasn't with me, and I thought, I'm getting that album. He will love this. Well, I got it and it had a sticker on the front of it. And it says not for general public sale or something like that along those lines. And I thought, what in the world is this? And I remember having to go back home and look it up on my computer when I finally had internet and was able to look it all up. And sure enough, it ended up being a like a demo album that they used to send to the radio stations, like before it was actually out yet. They would send those out to all the radio stations. So it was kind of cool because it was not a regular album that you would see, you know, at the local Hastings or wherever else.
That's got to be worth something, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know quite what, and I know they're supposed to come with like some pictures and stuff like that. It was basically the EPK of the 70s or you know, or just before the EPK era itself, you know. So yeah, I would say it probably is worth something.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Not for
sale. You redeemed yourself, although it was Ernest talking about the Backstreet Boys. So no shame in that. All right. All the members of the band, who's the most athletic?
I'd say it's probably Jared.
I don't know. I'll take that as a compliment.
I would say probably Jared. You could also definitely say you can make a pretty good argument for Chris.
Chris is
Lord of Mercy. Yeah. He's got a P90X workout every show.
Oh yeah.
So he's he comes off those drums just dripping sweat.
Who has the worst taste in food in the band?
It's got to be Seth. I'm gonna guess that it's Seth.
I think it's Seth. We went to Taco Bell and he ordered some just like 2 plain crunchy tacos. And I was like, man, you get anything off this menu and you got crunchy tacos.
Did he even put hot sauce on them or anything?
I don't think so. I was like, man, I'm buying. What do you want?
Very plain. Oh, that's disgusting. Who has the best fashion sense in the band?
So we knocked Seth on the last one. I think he's probably... he has the best fashion sense, but he talks himself out of it too much. He's too unsure of himself. Sometimes he'll pull out some you know, the bell bottoms, you know, the flares, and some really cool shit, but I gotta go with Seth.
I could or see John. Seth, and I was gonna say John. He'll surprise me too, man. John, he's got good taste. There's no doubt about that.
All right.
He's into the vintage trucker hats and all that kind of good stuff, you know.
That's cool. Yeah, man, just you got to encourage him. It sounds like his instincts are right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you guys prefer to stream like TV and movies, or do you like to read?
Oh man, you know what? I've been doing audiobooks. I hate to be difficult on that one, but maybe
it's split in the middle, like right through the upright, like right, you know, thread the needle.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I just got finished reading Tom Petty's, I can't remember the name of it. Tom Petty's biography that's out. And that was incredible.
Brian, did you read that? You're a big Tom Petty guy.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. I guess I'm probably more for the streaming, I guess, between the two, but even then I don't watch too terribly much TV either. I don't know. I'm more of a sitting out on the porch talking kind of guy.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure your wife probably appreciates that.
Yeah, or I drive her crazy. I don't know. If she turns TV on, I know she's done.
Okay. Very good. Is there anything that you would recommend for Brian and I to check out that's streaming right now?
Yeah, Succession. My wife and I just finished Succession, and that was such a good show. It's got to be one of my favorite shows.
That was a big deal. I've heard and read a lot about it. I've not seen it yet, but it's definitely on my to-do list.
Oh, it's incredible.
We just now got through that, the 1883 and the 1923 series. I'm sure you've probably seen them, but those are killer series. All the Yellowstone stuff and their spin-off. Yeah. Great stuff.
Well, they use Blackberry Smoke music, and you got to watch it.
Yeah, they've got Myers.
And Whiskey Myers, yeah, you're right. All,
yep. 49 Winchester.
49 Winchester, another good band. There you go. Those guys, what state are those guys out of? Tennessee? Kentucky? Georgia? Do you know?
Man, I don't know. I don't know. I'll regret saying they're not from Tennessee and then look up and they are, but I'm not sure. Don't quote me.
If only we had, information fingertips.
I'm going to guess Kentucky.
And the Virginia. Is...
Wait a minute, Castlewood, Virginia.
Wow,
we were all wrong. All right, then. Well, there you go. Just learned something today, Virginia. all right. As we kind of get close to wrapping things up, what is the worst show you guys have played?
Oh,
I let that worst broad for a reason.
Worst venue or worst.
Could be worse for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I definitely remember. I don't even know if I want to say it.
You don't have to use people's names or the name of the venue if you want to protect,
No, this is years ago. We ended up, I think our drummer at the time, he was sick. And, we were friends with this other guy that knew our set pretty well. So we're like, do you want to play it with us? And he did, but he when he showed up to the gig, he was drunk, he had really drunk. And he, after the first song, it was pretty clear that, he made it through sound check fine.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
it got worse and worse as the show was going on. Like, it got to the point where it was like, we were all kind of like looking at each other like, man, are we going to make it through this?
Yeah.
And luckily we, at the time we'd played the venue multiple times. So I knew the owner well, and I kind of talked to him. I was like, man, I don't think we're going to make it the whole night, dude. I'm just telling you. And he's like, that bad? I'm like, yeah, I think it's that bad. And he's like, well, I tell you what, y'all, I said, we're still willing to try. And we got him outside. We're going to talk and see what we can figure up, and we'll come back on. He's like, okay, cool. And he was like, well, if something happens and it's if it's going south, just give me a nod, and I'm just going to bring the house music up, and y'all just turn down, and we're just going to
fade out.
Transition.
We made it I don't know if we even made it through the first song or if it was the second song of that next set. And I immediately looked over. I'm like, big nod, like, turn that music up right now. We ain't making it.
Was he drinking because he was nervous or because it was like a party or what?
Yeah, I don't know.
I have a feeling it probably started earlier that day, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. He just was not in the headspace for drums that night. There's no doubt about that. So kind of disappointing, but everybody's got to have a bad show at some point, I guess.
That's definitely our worst one, right? You have one that's worse.
No, that's the one that immediately came to my mind. And I thought, and then as soon as you said something about the drummer, I thought, oh, I know what this one is.
I think I need to put a caveat that we would never, with the Dirty Gospel, we haven't played a show today without our original lineup, and probably wouldn't.
It was a different time. I mean, we were a cover. It was cover, and we tried to take it as serious as possible back then. We take the shows and playing seriously, but when we made the change, it was kind of now like, all right, you're in the band, and when we go to play, You know, people expect to see this band, not whoever we could get to play this instrument this day or fill that spot, you know. I don't want to make it look like we're a bunch of session players. We are the Dirty Gospel, you know, so it's important for everyone to be there for every show.
I like it. So let's leave on a positive note. You guys could choose any band to go out on tour with. Who are you choosing?
Blackberry Smoke, Charlie, give us a call.
I'll email them and I'll say, hey, I got a band for you guys to check out. Is that unanimous?
That's definitely unanimous, but just to change another answer, just to have something else, I'll definitely throw out Whiskey Myers in there too, because we would be just, I mean, starstruck if that, something like that was to ever happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way you guys are going, this record, Higher Ground, great. You guys got a great sound, great energy. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens for one or both bands. Would you, Brian?
No, man. Talk to Tyler Baker from Goodbye June or the guys from the Weathered Souls.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys familiar with Goodbye June?
Say that.
Yeah, are you familiar with Goodbye June?
Yes, I am. Yeah. Killer stuff. Yeah.
That last record, dude, See Where the Night Goes, it has that 70s AC/DC kind of blues, yeah, sleaze rock feel to it, and it's an amazing record.
Yeah, it's killer. I mean, and it's funny, we haven't crossed paths with them, so I don't know what they're, where they're, you know, where they're out of, but
Nashville.
Is it Nashville?
Are they Nashville?
Yep.
Yeah, they're killer.
They're recording a new album right now. Okay, check out.
But those guys are texting them. Those guys are in with the Whiskey Myers guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
As is the Weathered Souls out of Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Out of Knoxville. Hold on. All right. I'm hooking you guys up. I just text Tyler Baker for you.
Man, we appreciate that.
Just 10% of whatever you earn with him. That's it. That's all I ask.
I hear you.
Or a free shirt.
Well, I was going to actually say, I do need to get your address as well now that we've met.
No, I'll tell you what. I'll see you guys at a show and we'll take care of it.
There you go. I'll take you up on that. I can make something happen.
I bet you can. All right, guys. I love the record. I love what you're doing. All of our people listening to this podcast, where do we send them to find out more about the Dirty Gospel?
Follow us on Insta, Facebook,
our website,
thedirtygospel.com.
That's pretty much where you're going to get the majority of all of our new upcoming shows and news and all that kind of good stuff. So all our social media.
Streaming on all platforms, it looks like.
Yes, sir.
Is there one place you prefer people to go?
Spotify.
Yeah. Check out Spotify.
All right. You guys heard them. Check them out on all the social media platforms. Did you have TikTok?
We do not have TikTok yet. I was having a conversation with our drummers today. We were like, man, we got to get that going. So we're going to get on TikTok train before long.
Just put the guy with the most fashion sense on there.
Yeah.
Got to make it look good. Well, guys, thanks for being on. Love your stuff. Keep going. You heard them. Spend their stuff on Spotify. Check them out on the website, Instagram. All the good places. Right, Brian?
Yes. So thank you so much to Garrett and Jared from the Dirty Gospel. Pick up Higher Ground, the record, Already Gone, the single. Thank you guys so much for being on. You guys are in the All Things Blues and Southern Rock family right now, forever. So thank you so much for coming on, guys.
Thank you very much. We're humbled to be a part of it. So we'll be following your stuff. Thank you, man.
Big thanks to Jared and Garrett from our new friends in the new band, The Dirty Gospel. Love to hear about the guys from One for the Road coming to check out their show. Good to see the camaraderie and friendships there. Great to hear how big of fans of Blackberry Smoke those guys are. I'm just super excited about this new band. I've been listening to them a lot. They were so kind.
Love the new record, man. It's really, really good. Check it out. A lot of keys. T-shirt. Yeah.
The keys. Yeah. You really emphasize that. So I've been kind of listening extra for that.
I love that. I think the keys and organ definitely make the sound of like Southern or blues based music. I just love it. And they put that front and center. So enjoy.
For sure. Yeah, no, I mean, great record, self-titled, I believe I corrected with that. So you guys got to check out their record, go out there and get it. It's on Spotify. If you want to hear it, download it.
And we got the whole story, how they met in high school or junior high and back again in college and were a cover band for a while and added the members and became the Dirty Gospel that you guys are hearing right now.
And, you know, they told me, we asked them the story of the how the name came about, and they told us, and of course, in the episode, you know, I'm just like, I wish I would have thought of that. That would have been the perfect name for the podcast. But
it is a perfect name for, it's a great name for a Southern rock band, too, though.
For sure, yeah, for sure. So, well, you guys know we got a lot of great stuff coming up, so you'll look forward to that. And until then, always remember, Southern rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time.
That's better.
All right, hey, we're gonna turn it up, and hey, from the top, real quick, one more time. We'll be right back.
Jimmy Skinner. And how about some George Jones?
Them Stones.